Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show, with great guests and great laughs all call home. Now, from the Man Cave Studios in New Jersey, here are your hosts of the Bottom Line Sports Show.
Good evening and good evening, 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 everybody. Joe Brown, flying solo momentarily, back here on the Tuesday night edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show. Great show on tap, as always, going into the new weekend. And I think that it's safe to say it feels funny because this is actually the first weekend that we had to endure where there was no football, and it was just really, really tough to handle that. Stop. Listen, I'm a big fan of. Well, the last piece of the toilet paper went down, but I'm a big fan of the All-Star Game in terms of. It just seems like, you know what, it doesn't hold my attention for as long as the Pro Bowl or, I guess if I'm a sports, if an NFL fan, and correct me if I'm wrong, you try to hold on to that last bit of football. And I've actually DVR'd games. I go into the season knowing that, when the NFL season is over, I want to be able to have some of the best games up. And I know NFL Network does a great job showing some of the great games, but I might want to see some of my Buccaneers play. I might want to do some of those things. So we had the All-Star Game this past weekend. It was great to see Kobe Bryant honored. And the thing that made me so happy was he did demonstrate class and dignity and interacted with a lot of the people, and I thought it was nice that he did that, though. Eddie Murphy is joining us right now. Eddie Murphy's in the house. No need to applause, but Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, no need. What's up?
And Murph is already texting me to tell me he's on air. Murph, you look at the fact is that, you know, I just had mentioned, it's just obviously we go through the whole rundown of today's show, tonight's show. We're going to talk about the NBA trades. We're going to talk about, obviously, the NBA trades and projected trades that's going to happen. We're talking some NFL, some things that really happened in terms of the direction that teams are starting already to set up going into next year. And then in our Journey to an NFL segment, we'll talk to Rob Gronkowski's little brother, Glenn Gronkowski, as he prepares for the NFL draft, as well as we'll talk to Fife, Vashti Hurt. We got a big college basketball rivalry, Duke and UNC will be taking place. And I want to find out, you know, will this rivalry take a step back, you know, with the looming sanctions to be levied against possibly North Carolina? Like, how much of the rivalry will be able to endure that? So we'll talk with Vashti Hurt about that. But, Murph, I was talking about, you know, the All-Star Game, it was our first weekend without any type of football, and the All-Star Game didn't hold me like that, Murph, and I'm sorry. I'm just being honest. I got some of my Buccaneers games DVR'd, and I'm looking forward to going back and watching some of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We talked about the All-Star Weekend on the show on Sirius a couple of days back before it happened. And I think we both agreed that we needed to revamp everything, even the Saturday night stuff with the dunk contest, the skills competition, and the three-point shootout. And while I still don't care much for the skills portion of Saturday night, I thought the three-point shootout and the dunk competition were both very entertaining. Could have been one of the better dunk contests in a very long time. I know, you know, my recent memory, I can maybe come up with, you know, Jason Richardson being a fun one to watch. And Vince Carter before that. I wasn't really the biggest fan of the Nate Robinson, Dwight Howard years. But Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine are on the show. I think seeing Steph Curry win last year and then Klay Thompson's teammate win this year was pretty fun. And after Sunday, the game itself, it's just miserable. I mean, almost 200 points, no defense at all. The game flew by. It was just, you know, at the same time, though, the NBA knows what it is. It's just a time for your best players to hang out and to see each other and, you know, reconvene at a central location and have fun. And I guess it's about, like, the party atmosphere and and just in that respect. It's not really about the game itself. So I give him credit for at least realizing that, but it's still brutal to watch.
Yeah, I'd be honest with you. I mean, to be honest, I look at the game more so to find out who's sitting courtside, the celebrities. It just doesn't hold because I don't know if the game has the showmanship where when you had Magic, and we talked about this over the weekend, I remember when Magic played against Isaiah Thomas and we had, Tom Chambers. It was one of the last, if not the last, All-Star game in Seattle, and it was at the Old Kingdome. And you saw Isaiah going at Magic, and you saw a lot of these players sort of ratcheted up when it got close to that time. They'll say, okay, fine, let's go ahead and let's play. And we saw a situation where in that game, you had the back and forth. You had the back and forth. But one thing that stood out was Rolando Blackman getting fouled at the end of the game, having to go to the free throw line and make clutch free throws to tie the game up, to send it into overtime, and the West pulled that game out. So we did see the competitive component to a game. And it just seems like I didn't see that. I didn't see that. It's more of the hoopla. And, you know, like you said before, you're seeing a score almost 200 points, and, you know, guys are not really playing hard. So I just think that today's generation doesn't know how to sort of turn it up and turn it on when they really need to. But speaking about turning it up and turning it on, we had a situation, Murph. We finally have gotten some type of so-called trade. Detroit Pistons have acquired Tobias Harris from the Orlando Magic in exchange for Brandon Jennings, Ersan Ilyasova, as the deal was announced today. Murph, I look at this team, this trade, and I'm kind of surprised because this is two Eastern Conference teams trading with one another that possibly they're going to be fighting for a playoff spot. But also, too, I just thought that, you know, perhaps we would have thought it would have been Markieff Morris. Maybe the asking price was too much. But you get a young player in, you know, Tobias Harris, who's still, you know, a four-year, $64 million deal he signed last year. Let's look at this from the Detroit Pistons perspective. What are your thoughts on this from the Detroit Pistons perspective?
Well, I think it's a great move for them because they get a guy who could fit in a position that they need, and they had Reggie Jackson playing along with Brandon Jennings, and that's not, you know, the greatest. And you have two guys who are very similar players. You know, they're shoot first, point guards. I use the term point guard loosely. I guess they play the one. And then you have a guy like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope plays, you know, the two. And now you could slot in, you could play the four. Three and the four could be either Stanley Johnson or Tobias Harris. And then you have, obviously, Andre Drummond, the all-star at five. So I think in terms of, you know, roster on paper, it's a great move for Detroit. They got a guy who, you know, he's locked up long-term. Now, like you just said, they signed that contract last year, so, you know, he's there for the long haul. And they're a team that's, you know, right now they're in the playoff spot, hovering around that, you know, 7-8 spot and 9 spot, depending on, you know, that every day in the week it seems to be changing. But the Pistons, I think, really solidify their team, and they're getting a guy who could help them in ways they need. He could score the ball. And instead of having a lot of gym, you know, at the guard position, I think getting a guy like Tobias Harris is going to help them push him forward. I like it a lot from their perspective.
Yeah, I think you got to tip your hat to the Detroit Pistons general manager, Jeff Bauer, and also under the watch of Stan Van Gundy. I wasn't sure if I looked at this and I said, did the Detroit Pistons get as much as they could for Brandon Jennings? Yes, you give away Ersan Ilyasova, but I just look at the fact is that I thought Brandon Jennings was a guy that last year spearheaded a run that you almost got back into the playoff mix once they got rid of Josh Smith. I just didn't know if that was enough to get it. But listen, they've been struggling to find a small forward. I think they've been trying to do a lot of things. And, you know, Tobias Harris is a versatile young player, and he comes in pretty much, if you want to say, maybe relatively inexpensive, a four-year, $64 million deal that he just signed. He's still a young player. I think he fits in well with the Detroit Pistons, especially what they're doing. And now I don't know if there was any ever doubt if this team was Reggie Jackson's team when it comes to the point guard position, but now clearly that's the case. It's no more Brandon Jennings. Jackson doesn't have to look over his shoulder, and thus he goes. Jackson Jennings goes to Orlando. Now let's look on this on the flip side. The Orlando Magic bring in Brandon Jennings. Elfrid Payton is a guy that they drafted a couple of years ago. He's still going through his growing pains. But Murph, I'm looking at this deal. Yes, Ilyasova and Jennings will bring veteran leadership to this team somewhat. But my question now becomes, do you make the conscious effort to say that you're going to give the shooting guard spot to Victor Oladipo when you have Hezonja, you have Fournier that's been playing very well? And if that's not the case, does this inevitably sets up, in all likelihood, Victor Oladipo to be moved?
Yeah, I'm not really sure about what the thought process there was, especially when you go and re-sign Tobias Harris as they did last year, and then you go and move him. You could say, you know, arguably is their, you know, best player, maybe if you want to count Vucevic. Either way, like you just said, you have three guards now really at the kind of the same position. We have Oladipo, Alfred Payton, and now you have Brandon Jennings. None of really the pass first kind of got to set up and create offense, so it's pretty sure you're trying to do there. And then also you could play Fournier, the guard, as two guard. You could play Hezonja, who they just drafted very high in the lottery. They believe they were the fifth pick. Or sixth pick in the draft this past year. I guess you could say you can move them to forward, and now Aaron Gordon, who was also a very high lottery pick, can now play more since Tobias Harris is taking up a lot of his playing time. So, in a way, it clears up room for your forwards. But for the guards, I mean, I don't know. Do you just go with the hot hand? Do you go with, a rotation? Every couple of minutes you're moving guys around, maybe stick with Oladipo at the two and just flip-flop between Payton and Brandon Jennings at the one. I mean, I guess Jennings is used to now coming off the bench and rotating in because he did that with Detroit, so it's the same thing here. But I don't know how adding Jennings really helps the Magic from what they needed. But maybe in a way, addition by subtraction could work here because, you know, you can play Aaron Gordon, who obviously was, you know, the high-flying guy and the big name of the All-Star Weekend with his dunk performance. But, a guy they also wanted to count on for drafting him, I think, fourth overall 2 years ago. So, maybe he'll show some, you know, real talent, and it's a blessing in disguise because he's playing more. So that's the one thing you have to hope for after this trade.
Yeah, I just think that, this sets up perhaps another deal to be made and possibly moving a guy like Victor Oladipo that, as Elfrid Payton was going through his quote-unquote growing pains. You know, he filled in admirably playing the point guard spot. Now, do you move him over to the two-guard spot? But if that's the case, what happens to Evan Fournier, Mario Hezonja, who looks good in the World Games, is still a young developing player. You know, the Magic are still one of the youngest teams in the league. And I just try to figure out which direction they go with this trade. I think that you do bring in a guy that's electric, that can score from the point guard position and give them a little bit more point production. But just a question of, I still don't know the direction and the identity, if you will, Murph, with the Orlando Magic, and that remains to be seen. Another deal that remains to be seen is already mentions and talks that the Charlotte Hornets and Houston Rockets have had some exploratory talks in regards to possibly dealing Dwight Howard. And, Murph, I'm surprised at this because the Rockets are believed to be seeking at least one future first-round pick and for Howard, who's going to earn $22 million this season. He's earning $22 this year and expected to exercise his right to decline the $23 million option he has next year. I'm surprised that, if anything, that the Rockets would move this guy, because if you're moving him, I'm kind of surprised. It's almost like you're saying that he's more of the problem as opposed to the solution that's going on and everything that's going wrong in Houston.
Right. And quickly before I add to that, looks like on Twitter right now it's developing the Magic are close to trading Channing Frye to the Clippers, and looks like Lance Stevenson down the way back. So if that happens, I guess while the show, I'll bring it back up, but that'd be another head scratcher, I think, for the Magic. But anyway, back to your point of the Hornets trading for Dwight Howard with the Rockets. To me, when I see this move, I think of two things. On Houston's end, number one, it's just they're giving up. They're waving the white flag, and they're also, they're siding with James Harden. Yeah, it's not a secret that James Harden and Dwight Howard have both have a divided locker room. they have their guys in one corner, you know, and Harden's guy in one corner, Dwight Howard's guy in the other corner, that I think is the reason why Kevin McHale is fired. So, obviously, with the faction in the locker room, you know, and let's be honest, they're not going to beat the Spurs, they're not going to beat the Thunder, they're not going to beat the Warriors. I think they need to obviously do something. But trading away Howard, who is your second best player, it's interesting because you now are just going to drop severely in the West Coast, in the Western Conference race. So I'm not sure what their thought process is there. On the flip side, it definitely helps the Hornets. I think it makes them a real, you know, not a contender in the East, because I don't think any team really can contend besides the Cavaliers. But, you know, maybe the third best team, maybe with, I guess, after Boston, and then obviously Cleveland is the number one team. Having Kemba Walker and Dwight Howard together is a pretty good matchup. Maybe it'll help things out with Frank Kaminsky's development. I'm not sure how much, you know, Dwight's known being a mentor or not, but it certainly will help make the team better. And I don't think it'll put them, you know, near the top of the East. It's not going to make them, you know, beat Cleveland. I don't think Dwight Howard has it in him. He's not that level of player anymore. But
yeah, it's
not a bad move.
It's good. It's going to be something that's continuing to develop. Let's switch gears right now because, again, in a couple of weeks we're going to have the NFL Draft Combine. And as always in our Journey to the NFL segment, we always like to get an opportunity to introduce you to the next core of athletes and individuals preparing to live out their journey, going back from guys like T.Y. Hilton to Clay Matthews, you name it. And to add that name to the list is a gentleman who has a familiar last name, and he's going to carve out a path for his own. Kansas State Wildcat Glenn Gronkowski joins us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Glenn, good evening. Gerald Brown and Eddie Murphy, how's everything going?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Glenn, I want to ask you, you know, obviously your last name is very, very popular. Your brothers from, you know, Glenn, from Chris, Dan, and as well as your brother Rob, obviously have carved out their niche, if you will, have made your name and that last name a household name. How much have you, gotten from each and every one of your brothers, from Chris, who played the position that you're going to be playing in the NFL as a fullback, to Dan, who was a tight end, along with Rob? How much is a little information or tidbits are you taking from each and every single one of them?
To be honest, not much. I mean, they're basically just making me do it on my own and learn everything on my own mostly. When we're all around each other, we usually don't talk much football, actually. We're just around it so much that we usually talk about other things. So, to be honest, not much, surprisingly. But, I mean, like I said, they're just making me learn it all on my own like they did.
Wow,
Glenn, I got to ask this on the same subject as with, you know, your brothers and the family name being in the news seemingly every day. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with people, either, I guess, for you personally, asking you about your other brothers, or how do you deal with, you know, all the stories that come? Do you just kind of block it out, or do you like it? I mean, you guys are really that much of a fun family that you just laugh it off and it's totally fine with you?
Yeah, definitely just laugh it off on that. But I mean, I don't mind it at all. I mean, all my brothers have worked so hard, and I've seen it firsthand, so they deserve all, everything that they've gotten. So I really don't mind it because they've earned all that, and they definitely put in all the work to be talked about.
Glenn Gronkowski joining us here in the Journey to the NFL segment. Gerald Brown, Eddie Murphy. Now, Glenn, you played for a gentleman I think is really synonymous with college football, the legendary coach in Bill Snyder, and just really get year in and year out being able to put up effective Kansas State Wildcat teams. Talk about your experience in playing at Kansas State under the watchful eye of Bill Snyder, and the decision to know when you were ready to make that jump and announced that you were leaving a year early to this year's NFL draft.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just an awesome program to be a part of, especially having a Hall of Fame coach over there. I mean, he definitely teaches you a lot, not just about football, but about life as well, being disciplined and just learning all those core values that you need in life to succeed in life. So to learn that from one of the best was awesome. I think it was just time to move on once my junior year came. I already had 2 degrees and a minor and a 3.8 GPA. So academically, it really didn't make sense to come back. And then football-wise, I was getting a couple less reps. I think I had a good freshman, sophomore, and junior year. So just looked at the positives and thought it was a good time to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. I know you said that, you know, your body takes that many hits. Obviously, it's hard to get paid for it. So can't follow you there. You know, you played fullback a lot in K-State, but a lot of people are saying now you could kind of transform to an H-back role, a tight end role. Is that something that interests you? Are you working on that, catching more balls, or what's that process been like?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just signed at the Senior Bowl. They had me playing H-back, fullback, tight end, slot receiver, and they had me in all the special teams. And I think that's exactly what I can do at the next level, is play all those, be very versatile, be very dynamic, and play at all those positions, help out a team wherever I can. I think that's the way my body's made, and that's the way that I can perform out on the field, is just helping out wherever I can. So I think that's the best thing for me.
Now, Glenn, you've been really, again, I've been talking to Christina Allure, who's a great friend to the show, and really she was saying, Glenn, it goes to bed about 9 o'clock and you're up so early
yep.
in training. Talk about just this whole process, and how difficult has it been for you to start, you know, do you find yourself, you know, daydreaming in terms of what is it going to be like when you finally hear your name called? Just talk about the whole process itself and being in a situation of preparing for yourself each and every single day with the combine right around the corner, and as well as looking at, you know what, in April or right around the corner, you're going to have the NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a lifetime goal, not just for me, but for my whole family, to have all of us play in the NFL, to play professionally. So, I mean, like I said, it's been a goal for my whole family. So, to be there in April, I mean, obviously blessed to be there and everything. But, I mean, obviously some days get tough when you're training and all that, but when you think about that, I mean, it helps you move forward and try and get better every single day. But definitely been a tough process. Working out 12 hours a day, waking up at 6, not going home until about 6, and then going right to bed at around 9. So not doing much besides just working out right now and everything. That's definitely a grind, but will definitely pay off.
Now, Glenn, you're down with your brother in Florida, right?
Yes, with him right now.
So what have you guys been focusing on in terms of your workouts to help? Is he focusing on stuff for the combine or just stuff that you thought you lacked and want to get better, or are you just kind of doing a bit of everything?
Doing everything for the combine right now. Doing combine drills, speed drills. Obviously, just lifting and working out. He's actually on a different program than me. Obviously, he did not train for that. So he's doing a couple of different things. But everybody that's down here with me, we're all training for the combine right now. Training for our pro days, making sure we're in shape still, and just doing all that stuff.
Yeah. Glenn, if you had a chance, and obviously you talked about the combine, you're going to be invited to the combine and you're going to go there. And obviously, if you had an opportunity right now to let all the NFL teams obviously in the league that have a draft pick, what would you want them to know most about Glenn Gronkowski?
Like I said earlier, just that I can be dynamic and flexible, that I can open up another roster spot for them. Help bring in other players because I can play other positions. Obviously, at K-State, I play mostly fullback, so I got to go up there and show them that I can play other stuff. And I think that's why the Senior Bowl was huge for me, to go up there and show them that I can do that other stuff. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, if you watch film, you won't see any of that, but I definitely think that I can bring that to an NFL team.
Yeah. So you've been talking about working with your brother and you're saying that you don't really take football advice and kind of just hang out. I got to know. A day in the life of, you know, being in the Gronkowski household, what goes on in a typical day, just from morning all the way to night?
I mean, a lot of working out, actually, but obviously a lot of joking around and all that. Probably a lot of stuff I can't repeat, probably not going to say. But, I mean, you can only imagine it. I mean, everything that you can think of, we're probably doing it.
Oh, wow. That sounds like fun. Hey, listen, Glenn, really, really appreciate you jumping on the line. Listen, I know that obviously, you know, with the last name, you want to carve out your own niche, and rightfully so, but I want you to do us a couple of favors. Number one, stay humble and stay hungry and keep working hard. And do us a favor. After the combine is over and right before your pro day or some way, definitely love to have you back on and let us be able to understand your journey as it's seen through your eyes. Well, it'll take you all the way up to having your name announced during the NFL draft. So we definitely look forward to having you back on. And listen, best wishes moving forward. Do what you got to do out there at that NFL combine and keep working hard. And we look forward to talking real soon.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure.
Right,
Glenn Gronkowski joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Great, great insight, Murph. As I said before, a guy that's putting in a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, the family name, the pedigree speaks for itself. You got, you know, four brothers going to be in the NFL at one point or the other. It's like, you know, I think it's only been done once or twice before, I think, in NFL history, from what I've read. And it's just incredible. His brother might be, you know, going down as the greatest tight end to ever play. And I think Glenn and the skills that he has, I mean, if you go look what he's done in his career, it's crazy. Not even just from an athletic standpoint, from an academic standpoint as well. Obviously, a really smart kid. And he's right when he says he could fill up any roster spot. And he's playing H-back. He's a slot receiver, fullback, tight end. Special teams takes pride in that. So when you have a guy who's willing to do all those things, I think it goes a long way with the coaches. And plus that when you're that flexible and that, open to doing those certain things and learning, he's going to have a roster spot. And, you know, Mel Kiper has him at the top underclassman fullback. So, you know, he's actually a really good player, too. I think he was second team all Big 12 last year. So it's, I think his future is pretty bright, and it's just nice talking to him for a bit.
Yeah, it was great. And, I mean, again, you got to remember, a guy's getting up 6 o'clock in the morning. He's really, really working. I really admire that in terms of his, work ethic. And I thought it was really interesting how he alluded to the fact is that he says that his brothers are not really giving him any type of information to help him out. He's kind of figuring it out on his own. And that's kind of fascinating because I think the key thing is what he will have to endure even more magnified is the fact is that he's going to be living in the shadow of his brother, Rob Gronkowski, who's the only one that's in the league now. But I think the key thing is being able to carve out a niche for himself. And as he said, you know what, Rob Gronkowski was there with them, and, you know, it's really going through that whole process. So I think clearly he's a guy that's going to be drafted based upon his abilities, but it also doesn't hurt the fact is that he has an interesting last name, and it was great to really hear his journey and then what it means to him in terms of getting prepared for the NFL and the combine. I think that combine is going to be something where I always like to see guys, and I think this year we don't have that sort of quote-unquote guy that we're trying to find out about a lot, and then in the days and the weeks to come, we'll be getting more in-depth with the draft combine and really some of the insight of guys who we need to pay attention to and guys that really have a lot on the line. A couple of things that wanted to get into, with the a couple of little tidbits that are going on already, as it's already announced that the Indianapolis Colts and the Green Bay Packers will play in the Hall of Fame game. I think that was a no-brainer based upon the fact is that I believe Brett Favre is going in, as well as you'll have Tony Dungy going in there and playing for the Indianapolis Colts. And I'm kind of surprised that I don't know if that was something that they perhaps might have talked to Tony Dungy. But do you think they would have been interested to see perhaps maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers played in that game since he really built that team? Or do you think that that's perhaps some of a conversation they might have had with him, knowing the fact is how the way things ended with Tampa Bay?
No, I think it's just a pipe dream of yours to give the Bucs any little publicity they can.
A knife, man. You really, really do cut like a knife.
Because I don't know if you do it for radio purposes or what, but you know when you think of Tony Dungy, you hear his name and you look at his resume, what stands out is winning Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. That's going to be, yes, I'm not denying what he did with the Bucs, and obviously bringing him to where he did was he rebuilt that team. And then obviously John Gruden takes over, and then you win a championship. But what Tony Dungy did is, it's fine for that organization, but he accomplished the top goal with the Colts. So I think he has to go with the Colts.
I don't know. I think the key thing is that you always take a shot at my Buccaneers. I don't know. I don't understand that, Murph. But I thought it would be good
question
for him to be there. And it's just not for radio purposes. Look, he built the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's no denying that. He built the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
He built the foundation for what became a Super Bowl team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where he couldn't get us over the hump. He couldn't get us over the hump, and it was difficult, but it's really interesting. Now, there's been some other stuff, and we'll go ahead and switch gears, and we'll get into some conversation in terms of just with the upcoming NFL draft. We'll get back to the trade deadline talk as well as college basketball, talk with Astar Hurt, as well as we'll talk with Fife Dog. But the Redskins, reportedly, there's been conflicting reports that the Redskins have broke off conversation or negotiation talks with Kirk Cousins. If you will, Murph, are the Redskins pretty much, I guess, if anything, in pretty much a contract demands bargain, I guess basically fighting against their own selves in terms of how much money they're going to offer him? Is that predicated on the fact is that there is no other competition, or I guess the main competition would be themselves?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's against themselves. It depends on every year you're going to have teams who are going to bid and we don't hear about and come out of the blue. But I think it seems like in every single league, too, the amount of the salary cap is just going up. So it's just a matter of time until when they want to show out the, you know, whatever the expected price will be, obviously a lot more than it has been in years past. So I think it's up to them. I think they still have the advantage.
Yeah, I just think, and then there's reports now that say that they're not sort of, you know, the contract talks still remain on and they're moving in the direction. But there's some other stuff. Gerard Mayo says retiring from the New England Patriots, as well as you have some of the other stuff that's going on in terms of the Detroit Lions cutting Joik Bell, a guy that was sort of their quote-unquote main runner, a guy that came out and supplanted, I think it was Reggie Bush, when the Lions went out and signed Reggie Bush. He was a guy that really came in and staked his claim. And then all of a sudden, we understand Amir Abdullah came on the scene. But surprised that they cut a guy who just couldn't stay healthy in Joik Bell.
Yeah, it's the life of the running back in the NFL nowadays. I think we were having this conversation the other day, too, about I think it was Adrian Peterson, but really you can't even name like a workhorse running back, a guy who does first, second, and third down. And you have these short careers where you have a role, and then once you get to, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in, and you have a contract issue coming up, or you miss a couple of games, the NFL is the one league without guaranteed money. So it's just, you know, cut you, see you later. It's just what can you do for me lately? And it's just that's why every team now has 2, 3, 4 running backs, because you just become it's almost just like a machine. You just put the next, it's just the next man up, and it's scary. If you're a running back, I mean, your shelf life in the NFL is way shorter than it used to be. So I'm not really surprised at all. I still think that he's a serviceable NFL running back, but some other team will pick him up.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see how that goes. You know, one of the things, it really, again, it's just interesting you talk about running back. Speaking of running back, you know, D'Angelo Williams, who had an unbelievable fill-in season with the Pittsburgh Steelers after being let go by the Carolina Panthers, did something that was really weird. I think he posted on Twitter, the fact is that he posted the big nature of the business where he actually had a termination contract from the Carolina Panthers, and basically, again, how it to basically, you know, lay it out in terms of the decision to let him go, where they checked off, in the judgment of the club, your skill or performance has been unsatisfactory as compared with that of other players competing for the position for the club's roster. And he just talked about the cold-blooded nature that goes into the whole situation, about the fact is that, you know, how cold-hearted of a business you know, and then it got a little crazy because there's some fan of the New England Patriots tweeted back and said, told the running back he probably would be properly respected if he came to New England. And then D'Angelo Williams threw all of a sudden Tom Brady and Bill Belichick into this equation. And he said, quote, from what I told, Tom Brady likes the coach, so no thank you. Only Tom Brady likes the head coach, so no thank you. I'm happy where I am. Murph, first and foremost, how surprised are you at D'Angelo Williams going and taking the liberties of posting his termination letter from the the NFL?
I'm actually not anymore, thanks to Super Bowl Media Week, because I heard him do a couple of interviews on various shows, and he was very vocal, very he had like an edge to him, it seemed almost, and he's not afraid to say what was on his mind. So after before that, I didn't even know really much about his personality, but after seeing how he's acting during Super Bowl Week a couple weeks back, then I was like, okay, this guy maybe has a future in this, or is not really afraid to say what he thinks. So him posting that, it was not really a surprise. It's another example of why if I was a team owner, GM, coach, I would just try to put in some kind of, and I know it sounds kind of harsh to do this, but like a social media ban and just keep all my players off social media, because there's really never anything good coming from it. They're going to say, you know, what's on their mind, and as much as I respect that as a guy in the media, when players are not, you know, they're being candid and saying their true thoughts, it doesn't work well for the actual organization. So I would just say everyone get off Twitter, because you're just going to get either blasted by fans or fans of opposing teams, and it's just not a pretty thing. And it complicates a lot of things. So that's another example of just why it's not really conducive for off-season with these players.
Let's bring into the equation legendary hip-hop legend, sports fanatic. He knows his sports, and I know he's going to probably be losing his damn mind, or let alone his voice, this upcoming week is I think the second best rivalry in college basketball, that being Louisville and the University of Kentucky. You'll have the old UNC and Duke rivalry. Fife Dog joins us here. Fife, what's going on? Let's work backwards first and foremost before we get into that whole foolish talk about the second best rivalry in all college basketball. There are some deals that are actually happening now. Let's deal and start with the first one that's recently happened. The Charlotte Hornets acquired Courtney Lee from the Memphis Grizzlies in a three-team trade that includes other players. Now, P.J. Harrison, who was a draft pick, a guy that played at UNC, is going from Charlotte to Memphis, and they have also acquired Memphis. They've acquired Chris Anderson from the Miami Heat. The also Hornets also parted with Brian Roberts, who was traded to the Miami Heat. Now, the Grizzlies will receive 4 second-round draft picks as part of the trade. 2 of the picks were from the Hornets, as 2 of the picks were from the Miami Heat. Let's look at it from the Memphis Grizzlies. Courtney Lee, look from the Charlotte Hornets. Courtney Lee is a guy that now all of a sudden goes from the Memphis Grizzlies to a Charlotte Hornets team. Fife, how do you like this trade, first and foremost?
Memphis got the best of the trade with the draft picks they'll probably have coming in. Well, depending on who they pick up, but you know that's a lot of draft picks that they're going to get. And then who else did they get?
Well, Courtney Lee, they also picked up Chris Anderson, the Birdman from Miami.
Yeah, that's very good. Chris Anderson brings defense to the Grizzlies, and then they get a few
PJ
nice
Harrison.
Draft picks. I think P.J. Harrison's okay. I don't know if he's going to end up there by next season, to be honest. But I think they come off with those draft picks. Chris Anderson, I think they get the best of the deal, even though I like Brian Roberts going to Miami.
Yeah. Murph, if you look at this deal from the standpoint of the Memphis Grizzlies, I have to agree with Fife in terms of Memphis looks like that they've gotten some pieces that's really going to help them moving forward. Does this improve their perimeter scoring? No. But I think, if anything, Murph, when I saw this deal, the first thing that jumps out to me is a couple of things. Number one, the health and well-being of Marc Gasol. In terms of dealing with that foot injury, probably not going to see him all that much, especially the regular season. And then also number two, the finish line is in sight for Zach Randolph as a Memphis Grizzly.
Yeah, I think they're realizing that their window's closing rapidly, and they're just trying to ship away guys and create cap space. I mean, it's just very strange because they're right now in the middle of the Western Conference playoff race. So to ship away a guy, Courtney Lee, is a great defender, a great three-point shooter, doesn't really make much sense. helps with the Hornets, obviously, a lot. PJ Harrison, from what I heard, wasn't great in the locker room from Charlotte. You bring the Memphis, maybe the transgenery helps, but bringing a guy who's a detriment to a team's locker room is not always, you know, a thing that I like doing. I think a good chemistry on a team goes a long way. I'm not sure what Chris Anderson and Bergman has left in him. So it's one of those things where they're like kind of waving the white flag, but to me, I don't get why, because you're so deep into the playoffs, the race already, you're not going to drop that much to get a top lottery pick. So I don't get why they wouldn't want to be competitive and try to convince Mike Conley, you know, we still have Marcus Gasol, we still, you know, did, you know, such and such in the playoffs, like, come stay here. So I'm not really in agreement with their whole attitude going forward.
Now, Fife, if you look at it from the Miami Heat standpoint, you said you like the option of Brian Roberts going to Miami. I agree with you on that. But do you see now that possibly Goran Dragic, who's been dealing with some nagging injuries, is a guy that, again, they have to bring in Roberts? Because keep in mind, they made the trade with the Grizzlies and really packaged Mario Chalmers off to the Grizzlies. Do you see that possibly this is sort of replacement for the fact that they made that decision to move Chalmers and a ho-hum Dragic hasn't been 100% healthy?
I do agree with that. I do believe that. But at the same time, I think it gives them depth. Because if Dragic could overcome whatever nagging injuries he's had, then you have a Brian Roberts who could come in, you know, and add to what he brings if he's healthy. If he's not healthy, at least you still have Brian Roberts. You still have Dwayne Wade and whoever else was there. So I think it just adds depth to the team. I thought it was a smart move.
Yeah, and then, you know, Murph, if we look at the Charlotte Hornets, I'm scratching my head because now you bring in Courtney Lee, who's a serviceable two-guard, but I don't think he's a guy that can light it up from the perimeter. I don't know what type of a fit is he with Kemba Walker. Is this kind of a desperation move, or is it just seeming like that Jordan and the Hornets really wanted to make a splash?
No, I just think they're trying to get a smart player who can help them in just certain roles. Like I said, he's the best part of his game is his defense and three-point shooting. So I guess maybe you can play Kemba at the one at some points with him there, or, you know, him with Jeremy Lin at, you know, various points whenever Kemba needs to blow. You know, if they go and make this move, and then maybe, you know, the Dwight Howard stuff does come through, then you're looking at not a bad team who's already, I think, in the A spot right now or a game out of the A spot. So I think they're trying to make the push forward the playoff race. They some reason want to get, you know, swept by the Cavs in the first round, but I don't think it's a bad move necessarily, especially if it sets them up to be in a better position to get Dwight Howard.
Fife, do you see perhaps maybe Nicholas Batum moving from that two-guard spot to now the three with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist out for the season with that knee, the shoulder injury, and then inevitably sliding Courtney Lee into that backcourt? Do you think that hurts with a guy like Jeremy Lamb and his development?
I don't think it hurts it. I think it adds to the team because they're one or two injuries away from panic mode. You know what I mean? So I think it would be smart to move Batum to the three, Courtney Lee to the two. Jeremy Lin gives them some depth. He could play the one and the two. Kemba Walker's definitely going to start at the one. So, like I said, they're a couple of injuries away, one or two injuries away from panic mode. So I thought Courtney Lee was a good pickup for them. But at the same time, they're either going to sneak in the playoffs or they're going to be on the outside looking in. Because the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist injury, again, hurts totally.
Yeah. And Fife, staying with that, Murph and I had talked about the Detroit Pistons dealing Brandon Jennings to the, as well as Ilyasova to the Orlando Magic and getting Tobias Harris in return. Fife, I thought that I don't know if Detroit got everything they possibly could have gotten in return for a guy like Brandon Jennings. How surprised are you if you look at that now? Clearly they bring in Tobias Harris. I think he fills a need. But first look at it from the standpoint of Orlando. Do you still have a sense of an identity for the Orlando Magic? And if this move now with Jennings there, is it inevitable that we'll see perhaps Victor Oladipo moved?
I think we will see Victor Oladipo move, but maybe not. You never know. But I think Orlando has a long way to go right now by giving up Tobias Harris. So we'll see what happens. But Detroit definitely got the better of that deal. But you're totally accurate and correct when you say, I think Detroit could have got more. You know, giving up Brandon Jennings and Ilya Sova. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I'm not mad at their end of the bargain compared to Orlando.
Yeah, I just don't know. And Murph, I asked this earlier. I don't know the identity of the Orlando Magic, which has still been struggling to sort of a really develop one since trading Dwight Howard. Because if you look at this team, I think that clearly, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're still void of a quote-unquote franchise cornerstone guy on their team. It's not Aaron Gordon. I don't care what he did in the All-Star game and the slam dunk competition. Nikola Vucevic is not that guy. It's not. I just don't see that. Yes, he's an effective player, but I don't believe he's a difference maker. It wasn't Tobias Harris, and I just don't see this on that team. Do we still not know how good the Orlando Magic can be, or do we still not know the direction of this franchise, Murph?
Well, like I was talking about before, it's just a situation where they have a lot of names, seems like some talent on paper. It doesn't make any sense why they go re-sign Harris, and then you have a log jam at forward with Hezonja and Evan Fournier and Aaron Gordon, and then now you kind of make a log jam at the one and two guard, with the three guys who are all very similar, like with Oladipo and Alfred Payton and now Brandon Jennings, are all shoot-first guys that don't really create. So they have talent. Those guys are talented players. Obviously, they're moving closer to a playoff spot, but I just don't get really what's going to happen here. My only, like I said before, only thing I can see happening that might be a blessing in disguise is with more playing time now, Aaron Gordon develops into the player that they thought he'd be.
Well, I mean, here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Fife Dog, Eddie Murphy, Gerald Brown, upcoming Vashti Hurd. We'll talk a little about the second best college basketball rivalry in all of college basketball. But if you look at it, Tobias Harris was playing the small forward spot. Hezonja was backing him up. I do believe that Hezonja now goes to that two guard spot. That false small forward spot. But you bring in now Elfrid Payton, Shabazz Napier is still there. You still have C.J. Watts in there, and Payton's still a young player that's going to have to develop. But I think that in order to bring back a small forward, which they didn't get in the deal, and they brought back Erica Elisova, I believe that there's, like you said, Murph, you said that there have been talks that Channing Frye would now go to the
Clippers.
L.A. Clippers for Lance Stephenson. That would be kind of a head-scratcher because, again, really in terms of that, I think that would even make Victor Oladipo now – again, a guy that's a little bit more expendable moving forward. Fife, how surprised are you at the moves that are being made, and yet it's only Tuesday?
I mean, it's decent. I don't think it's made such a big splash. They're okay moves. I think Detroit made the biggest splash by getting Harris, but everybody else, it's just okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for tomorrow. I'm waiting for Thursday to see what happens. But I agree with you guys. Orlando's looking weird because I even forgot Shabazz Napier was over there. Totally.
Yeah.
So now if they go and pick up Lance Stephenson, it's like, really, what are y'all doing?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't understand. And maybe it's a sense of urgency to try to make the playoffs. But if you look at that, another deal that's been reported around, there's been exploratory talks between the Hawks and the Hornets in terms of trying to get Dwight Howard. If you are the Houston Rockets and you move Dwight Howard, is that a signal or perhaps a sign that they felt that Dwight Howard was more of a problem as opposed to the solution?
Sorry, Fife.
I was talking to you, Fife. Go ahead.
I think they thought eventually they thought he was a problem. But that team, I don't know, that team is just, it's not looking good over there at all. I don't think that GM knows what he's doing at all, like totally. Because you get rid of Josh Smith, you get Josh Smith back, now you want to get rid of Dwight Howard. The ball sticks, with Harden in the game. It's just ridiculous. Ty Lawson's supposed to be the general, but Harden has the ball 85% of the time. It's not a good look over there. So I don't think I'd blame Dwight Howard for all of it, some of it, but not all of it. So yes. if they plan on using him as a scapegoat, I don't even see that. I see right through it.
Yeah. Speaking about seeing right through it, let's bring on a great, great friend of the show, CarolinaBlitz.com. And we spoke to her before the Super Bowl, and the city of Charlotte was really, really excited. Didn't turn out too well, but thankfully they have the All-Star game next year in Charlotte. Carolina Blitz only own Vasti Hurt. Vasti, good evening, Gerald, Eddie Murphy, Fife. How's everything going?
Everything's good. I'm finally over the Super Bowl complete meltdown that the Panthers had. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's Duke North Carolina game.
Oh, goodness. Now, I asked you a question. I actually asked Fife, and I wanted to get this, and we'll get Fife's thought on this. In terms of this rivalry, which is clearly the second best rivalry in all of college basketball, to that of the mighty Louisville Cardinals and the University of Kentucky Wildcats, talk about this year's rivalry. How much does it matter now that the fact is Duke has really been able to get back into top 25? Or does it really even care? Do you throw the records out when these two teams meet?
Well, first, let me address your introduction. There's no way that Duke. There's no way that Duke and North Carolina take a backseat to Louisville, Kentucky. If you look at the series historically, these are two of the best programs in college basketball. I believe I saw a stat today for the last, like, over a crazy amount of years. One of the two of these teams have been ranked in the top 25 when they've met each other. It's absolutely ridiculous to even think that Kentucky and Louisville holds a candle to Duke, North Carolina. Now, moving on.
Well, I must interject, if I may add. They've met in the NCAA tournament and playing for, inevitably, the ultimate prize and thus going on and playing for the championship. I don't see that. I think that has elevated that rivalry because the fact is they only meet once a year, and yet they met in the NCAA tournament, something that Duke and North Carolina have not been able to do, where you're playing for all the marbles. And unfortunately, Duke and North Carolina, I think, is more hype in perhaps the last 10 to 15 years more than anything. So I'm giving the
nod to University of Louisville,
as well as Kentucky, as well as the fact is that you have an individual, Rick Pitino, that coached at both institutions.
Can I add my two cents?
No,
I give Gerald props that Louisville and Kentucky did make it to the Final Four and played each other. That's very nice.
The game to go to the Final Four.
Okay, well then I don't give you props. Okay, because if they met in the Final Four or the National Championship, if they were the last two standing, okay, cool. But you talking to get to the Final Four, Elite Eight? Nah, I'm not giving them props for that. So
I don't care.
My two cents is this. Why are we talking about a team that can't even play in the ACC tournament?
Hold your tongue.
When the sanctions come down on the Tar Heels, we're not going to be able to talk about them being part of the Dutch rivalry. It's not going to matter. Okay? So now that Louisville unfortunately can't play in these tournaments, why are we having this conversation? And please, Vashti, please let him know that they do not hold a candle to the rivalry that is Duke and North Carolina.
I mean, to me, it's ludicrous to think that one Elite Eight matchup would even compare to the rivalry of that of Tobacco Road, where these schools meet each year, twice a year. They are in the same state. They are 9 miles apart. It's like you have your private institution versus your public institution. There are so many different factors that go into this rivalry that you can't even compare it. I mean, it's deep seated animosity in terms of the two fan bases. Like there's no way that you can compare the Tobacco Road rivalry with that of Kentucky and Louisville. One Elite Eight matchup hardly qualifies them to even be in the same conversation.
Terry.
Murph, go ahead. You, I guess, have the deciding voice in determining this.
Well, I'm not really a fan of – I'm not a fan of any of these teams here, but I think just from a, you know, innocent bystander's point of view, I think it's clearly the UNC – Duke rivalry is ahead of Louisville in Kentucky.
I don't even know why this is a subject. He's gassing himself.
I just believe that. I think this rivalry is going to be something.
We all know that Gerald is gassing this whole Louisville thing, and you're right. As of right now, the Louisville Cardinals are a non-factor.
I told you both, stop it. But Vashti, if we look at this, what can you tell us about this game? What can we expect in this game upcoming tomorrow in terms of these two franchises going at it once again?
Well, yeah, you asked whether the fact that, you know, Duke has not played as well as expected in ACC conference play, and North Carolina has been playing well. They had a two-game skid last week. It doesn't matter. You throw out all records when these two teams play. I mean, North Carolina could be 0-10 in conference play, and Duke can be 10-0 in conference play, and these two are still going to go at it. And there's no way that you can predict a winner just based on the conference record. It's just the level of this rivalry causes players to rise to the occasion oftentimes. And you look at historically, you know, the way that these games have gone, how they've come down to the wire. It's just I'm expecting a tough game. I think that Duke, who, you know, we all know that they fell out of the top 25 last week for the first time in a long time. They're back now in the top 25. They're on a four-game win streak, including Virginia and Louisville, and also a pretty tough NC State team. So I think Duke has an opportunity to make a very clear statement as far as, you know, everybody doubted them because they had those uncharacteristic losses to Clemson, Notre Dame, and Syracuse. I think people doubted them and said, okay, this is not the same Duke team. But this is the same Duke team that is coached by Coach K, which is, in my opinion, one of the GOATs of college basketball. So you can never count them out. As far as North Carolina is concerned, talent-wise, I have to give them props. I think they're one of the most talented teams in college basketball right now. And when they are all clicking, when they're clicking on all cylinders, they are a Final Four team. The only problem is it hasn't really happened. They played a really good game against Pitt, and I was impressed with how they played against that squad. And I think that Pittsburgh squad is a good team. So you know, you never know which North Carolina team you're going to get, and you don't know which team Duke is going to get. Duke has been living and dying by the three. North Carolina really is a big team. I think that they attack Duke down low. Duke is still missing Jefferson. It's going to be a tough matchup, but if Duke can hit their three-pointers, it's anybody's game. So I think it's going to be a good matchup. You know, I am so emotionally connected to this game that it's hard for me. Maybe I'm rambling, but I'm looking forward to it.
Vashti Hurd, Carolina Blitz, joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Fife Dawg, Gerald Brown, Eddie Murphy. I think it's totally a game that, you know, inevitably I think it's lost some luster, but you know what? Fife brought up a great point, and Fife and I have talked about this several occasions. We know inevitably, yeah, we've seen what Louisville is going through this season with the self-imposed ban. There's a lot of expectations that the sanctions will come down possibly next year. North Carolina, they're going to have some sanctions somewhere down the line. How much of an impact will that have on this rivalry moving forward? And you two being fans on both sides of the rivalry, how worried are you about the ramifications of those sanctions and what type of ramifications it would have on this rivalry? I'll ask you first, Fife, and then ask you, Vastai.
Well, first of all, I just want them to get it over with. If it's going to happen, let it happen. Let them get through it. Let them get past it. As far as the rivalry goes, if the sanctions come down or whenever they come down, that's the only thing we're going to have forward to look forward to is that game. Duke and North Carolina, good thing about it is they play at least twice a year. So that's the only thing we'd have to look forward to when those sanctions come down. But it's still a rivalry. We're still going to want to give them the business. They're going to want to give us the business, period, point blank.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, now, again, Vashti, you're looking from the standpoint of Duke, you know, in terms of the fact is that they don't have to worry about the sanctions because, let's be honest, it's always championship or bust, the goal with the Duke Blue Devils. But this is your in-state and, like you said, very close rival. How much those sanctions by UNC will hurt this rivalry, and is it possible if these sanctions develop and we know that they're going to come down, does it become a situation where somebody comes in and possibly fills the void as that rival, a la like a Virginia or the University of Louisville or somebody of that nature, NC State? Do you think that perhaps this would open up the door for Duke to look for another rivalry to sell?
Well, North Carolina's been skating by, and I don't know what the NCAA is doing. Why they have, you know, why it's taking them so long to decide what they're going to do with this basketball program. I think that there are the UNC program, athletics program in general. I think that they're hoping that people will forget about it, and they don't have to do anything because you have to understand basketball, college athletics is a business. And North Carolina is one of the best well-traveled teams, one of the most popular teams in college hoops. So if they do and when they do come down, will it affect the rivalry? No. And you said that it may have lost its luster. And maybe from a national standpoint, I know that you're in New York, and Fife's on the West Coast, and I'm not sure where Eddie Murphy is from. But here in North Carolina, like, this rivalry is still alive and well. This whole week, that's what everybody's talking about. People are going out, and they're wearing their Duke apparel, and people are wearing their North Carolina apparel. Bars are sold out as far as people trying to arrange tables to view the game. Random people are asking, well, who are you rooting for? So here in North Carolina, I think it's different because of that rivalry is so ingrained in our college hoops culture. And I don't think that any sanction that's handed down, you know, North Carolina could be boo-boo team or even, you know, Duke. Something may happen and, you know, I don't see it happening, but you know, even if you, one would consider this a down year for the Duke Blue Devils, and I still think that the rivalry is still as anticipated as it has been in recent history. So I don't see any sanctions hurting that rivalry. Some things are just bigger than that. Some things are just bigger than the individual talent on the team. And I think that this rivalry is. It's more about the actual school rivalry than, oh, we have this player going up against that player.
Okay, Vashti, before we let you get on out of here, who wins tomorrow night's game? I'll ask you first, then you, Fife. And why?
Gerald, I don't like answering these questions.
Because no, because you know what? You're part of the media. Separate your feelings from that.
Exactly.
You're part of the media.
I know. As a sports journalist, I have to answer in a non-biased way. But as a Duke fan, I always have faith and belief in my team. My non-biased journalist answer would say I think that I would say that North Carolina is going to win this game. They're playing at home. North Carolina really they play really well in the Dean Dome. I think that if they were playing in Cameron Indoor, it might be a different story. Also, I just don't see Duke being able to match up with North Carolina in the post at all. If they feed the post properly, Bryce Johnson could have another one of his 30-20 games. You know, you have Kennedy Meeks down low also. No way that Duke can match up with UNC in the post unless they spread the floor and they start and they just rain threes out of the building. So my journalist side says North Carolina, but my heart is still with Duke.
Fife, who wins this game and why? I mean, Grayson Allen won't be able to travel and get the winning call and stuff.
He traveled. Let's move on from that. Let's call it a Euro step, right? The Euro step?
It's called travel.
I think Carolina wins tomorrow. I think Bryce Johnson has a big game. Kennedy Meeks, he just scares me, just like Nate Britt scares me as well, along with Pinson. Like Nate Britt, Kennedy Meeks, and Pinson, they scare me. But I think Bryce Johnson will have a big game. Isaiah Hicks will add to that. And I think Carolina wins by at least 6 or 8 points tomorrow.
You're being disrespectful, Fife.
How am I being disrespectful?
Six or eight.
What's wrong with six? Maybe six.
But I don't see it. To me, eight is a bit of a reach. I think that the Blue Devils will probably have a chance to win it at the end.
So 2 points extra is being disrespectful?
Yes,
I
think so. That's the difference between a one possession and a two possession game.
Well, if that's how you feel, I hope we put hands on y'all about 20.
That's what I like to hear.
I was being nice saying 6, 8 points.
That's disrespectful.
I didn't say 10, 12, 13. I said single digits, and she took it there. Oh, I hope we put hands on them.
This is what I love. And Grayson Allen won't be able to walk. He won't be able to get that old phony bogus call that he got there.
It's called a Euro step.
I take no team seriously with that Plumlee boy. I'm just letting
you know. Let me give you a little history lesson in Duke basketball. And you'll remember a name that I bring up. And to me, when the Blue Devils won that championship, was it in, what, 2010?
Mm-hmm.
Was it 2010? 2010. Remember a guy named Brian Zubek? He was a bum, wasn't he?
Oh, goodness.
Brian Zubek was terrible, okay? Listen, Brian Zubek's play in the NCAA tournament propelled Duke to that championship. Now, Plumlee reminds me he's the same kind of guy, high motor guy, not much talent, but a big body. He could make a difference if he elevates his play come March. Don't sleep.
Just watch what I say.
And if Duke shoots about 45% from three, they'll win this game.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Now they're going to win.
No, I said before, if they shoot well from behind the arc, that they have a chance of winning. But that's
it's not happening. We're going to be in their jerseys. I promise you.
Yeah, clearly it's not going to be that situation. We'll have to see that. Hey, Vassar, always a pleasure. And really, really appreciate
you. You can't wait for this, Vassar.
I mean, what do you want to wager?
You let me know.
If Duke wins, I need you to rock a Duke shirt and say that Duke is the best team in college basketball, hands down.
I'll do that for you, but I did that when y'all won the title last year outside of wearing the jersey.
Oh, no, you got, we need some gear, something. I'll send you something.
Send me a jersey, whatever, I'll wear it, whatever. You have to do the same in return.
Murph, this sounds like it's going to be an interesting little wager that's taking place.
You have to post it on Instagram, Facebook, Periscope, Snapchat, everything. ACC Network, I don't care. You got to post it.
Deal.
Yeah.
Deal.
This is going to be very, very interesting. You know what? Again, this is great. I like it. Vashti, always a pleasure. And I guess we're going to have you back on to figure out who's going to be the winner or the loser of this bet. But I really appreciate it. Make sure you go to CarolinaBlitz.com and check out all the great stuff that Vashti Hurt has done and continues to do. Appreciate you, Vashti.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime. Fast I heard. Ooh, that should be really, really interesting. I want to ask you guys something in terms of the college basketball tournament as we're starting to move into that sort of the calm before the storm. We're having a lot of the teams that are playing. And if we had to look at this year's NCAA tournament, you know, there's always been that sort of quote-unquote bubble talk. And it just really seems like this year, I don't think that we're going to have a lot of that bubble talk. Murph, do you see that this year's NCAA tournament really, you know, because of so much parity, you couldn't really make a strong argument or a case for some teams to be left out?
I mean, I just feel like the college basketball right now is at an all-time low in terms of people caring and talent level and actual good teams. I would not be surprised this year if we see a team win that's, you know, we didn't even talk about it really at all during this season as it's been going on. So for bubble teams, I mean, if the top of the top stinks, I can't imagine how the bubble teams are going to be in the tournament next month. So, I mean, there always will be bubble teams just based on the fact that there are fringe teams in terms of record and strength of schedule and stuff like in regards to that. But I just don't think it's going to be a year where people care as much because there's been years past where there's been players we've known or teams that have been somewhat good or you know, nationally televised where we've seen them, we want them in tournament, but this year I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. Fife, if you look at this year's college NCAA basketball tournament, we already know Louisville's not going to be there. But for the most part, I don't really see a team being left out that arguably might have struggled. I would have said LSU has done enough to really get in. But if anything, you lose a power team in Louisville that clearly would have had one of the top seeds in the NCAA tournament. Do you think that because of that sort of decision, that ban, that you will see how it has a domino effect on other teams that might have been bubble teams now get an opportunity to slide in there?
I definitely think other teams will be able to slide in there because of the sanctions of Louisville and so forth. So, yeah, they'll definitely benefit from that. Unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned,
yeah,
it's a total damper. I mean, I'm not a Cardinal fan like that, but it's always been one of those teams that I look forward to watching in the tournament. And now they're not being able to play in those tournaments. It's a huge damper for me, at least. You know?
Yeah, I think you know, clearly, it's something that. It's really bothering me, and, I mean, it's going to be weird. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if you could look at it. I mean, look, does Villanova really be, you know, do you look at Villanova possibly winning it all, Murph? I mean, do you look at them? Could we see the Big 12 where all of a sudden, the Texas Longhorns, you know, they've been playing very well, and, you know, ho-hum, they get a big win beating the 10th seed in West Virginia tonight and stuff. Do you look at this whole situation where, as you said before, do you look at any of these teams right now that currently said that you could say that they have a legitimate shot of winning it all?
I mean, I've never had a feel less for a college basketball season than I do right now. If I had to put money on it, which I wouldn't, but I would say maybe, you know, Kansas, just because they've been so dominant at home, and if they get, mm-hmm. you know, a top seed, they'll be in it. I mean, Buddy Hield and Oklahoma have been a pretty good team, top to bottom this whole entire season. You know, they have a couple impressive wins. You know, it's just also a year where the top players in the draft, like Brandon Ingram on Duke, or say, you know, Ben Simmons on LSU, they're not carrying their teams to the next level. So that's also kind of disappointing, where I think it's just much more of a team effort this year. That's why I like teams like Kansas or Oklahoma. So, yeah, if you're saying Big 12 teams, I think those two right there are ones that I'd look out for.
Fife, we all know what the Big East stood for, and really just a history, and, you know, all of us really growing up in, you know, the New York City area and knowing the history and the tradition of the Big East. Fife, how much does it mean to the East, the Big East itself currently, where you can have the number one team and the Villanova Wildcats? And does this give sort of some credibility of the Big East now that they have moved on from that once rich tradition to, you know, obviously adding the Louisville's and the other schools? Do you think that right now that the Big East, it's just, how big is this for the Big East as a conference, having Villanova as the number one team in the nation?
It's cute, but it's definitely not the same. You know what I mean? It's not the same. It'll never be the same. Because when you think Big East, you think Mark Jackson, you think Mullen, you think Berry, you think Pearl Washington, you think Sherman Douglas, Moulton, you think Ed Pinckney, you think Patrick Ewing and John Thompson at Georgetown and so forth. It's totally not the same when I look at the Big East and I see, okay, I'm happy for Villanova and what they've been able to do, but underneath them you see a Creighton, you see all these other schools, and it's just not, I can't get into it. I can't get into it. So it's definitely not the same. It's cool for Villanova, but I don't know how big it is for the conference on a whole. Because you're going from you remember that year when Villanova upset Georgetown and won it all? You're going from Final Four when it was three Big East schools, Memphis State when they had Keith Lee. Now you're talking about a Big East and you're talking about Creighton. Like, come on, B. I can't take it serious right now.
Give me a conference, Murph, as well as Fife. Give me a conference you believe that has a legitimate shot of having an NCAA champion.
Big 12, easily.
Big 12?
I agree. Big 12.
Big 12. I thought about that, and I have to really raise some concern because the Big 12 is going to beat on one another when it comes to NCAA tournament time. And, I mean, that is going to be the biggest challenge for a lot of these teams. I think it might be an ACC, I mean, a Big Ten school. I mean, Big Ten because you don't have the constant battles. But if you look at that Big 12, my God, that Big 12 is going to be a challenge from Baylor to Iowa State. You already mentioned Kansas. You have Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. Texas playing very well. Texas Tech had a big win over the weekend. West Virginia is there. It's a gauntlet that these teams will have to endure and going through each other come tournament time. I think you might have a team like the Pac-12 that has a little bit legitimate shot. Which conference, Murph or Fife, do you have that you believe won't have an opportunity? They don't have a chance whatsoever, has the least chance of winning a national championship.
SEC?
Conference USA.
Yeah. It's like a minor conference like that. But for a major, I mean, SEC, I just don't like how LSU looks in the games I've seen them. They've been on national TV a lot for Simmons, and I just don't trust them whatsoever.
Yeah, I think maybe the Big Ten also I think the Big Ten could sneak up. I mean, clearly Maryland would be the proverbial favorite to be that team to represent them out of that conference. But I do believe that they might have a situation where they can inevitably come out of that conference and win a championship. So it should be interesting, but it just, again, it just doesn't have the same focus. Couple of things we talked about in terms of looking at the NFL and some of the stuff. We have the combine coming up. And Fife, we were just talking about this earlier in terms of just the way the conference, you know, football, we're right now in the thralls of what the NFL is all about. This is the NBA's time right now, because there's no competition. There's no MLB. There's no NFL. Do you think that basketball will be able to strengthen its hold on fans right now to really replace what football brought to us?
It'll do fine, but I don't think it'll ever be able to replace football ever again, to be honest. Football is just the cream of the crop right now. You know, at least with basketball, you get spoiled because your favorite team is playing at least every other night. With football, it's one Sunday. You got to wait for the next. Every game counts after the preseason, so forth and so on. So there's a lot of parity going on. So I don't think the NBA really compares to the NFL any longer. It's not the same NBA the way we knew it, you know?
No, I agree with you on that. And then if you look at everything as a whole in terms of what we're looking at right now, we were talking about the fact is that the All-Star game, it was good. You know, your thoughts on the All-Star game. And before you answer that, Fife, I had told Eddie Murphy, and we both had agreed that, you know, you scored almost 200 points. It's very little defense. I can recall when you had the showmanship of a Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, and one that stands out to me is that sort of All-Star game in Seattle where Tom Chambers won the MVP, where you had the showmanship guys going at one another, but then they started putting the clamps down in the third, fourth quarter, and then inevitably Rolando Blackman gets fouled on the last play. He has to hit two free throws to send the game into overtime. So we knew how veterans were able to turn it on and off and really make it a competitive game. Have we lost that in these All-Star games?
We definitely lost it. They totally lost it in this one because nobody decided to buckle down and play some defense with the last six minutes left in the game. So, I mean, it's a nice showcase, but at the same time, they're using it as an excuse now. Because like you said, I remember when Magic and Isaiah was ready to go at it with those last few minutes in the fourth quarter, and the West either locked down or the East locked down and won the game. Right now, the West just dominates. It's a shame that the East can put their best on that court with the West and still lose by 20-plus points. It's not cool. It's not cool.
Fife and Murph, I think you had mentioned this over the weekend here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown, Fife Dahl, Eddie Murphy. Murph, correct me if I'm wrong, you mentioned this, and Fife, answer this. Do you think it's possibly time to do what the NFL has done in terms of with the Pro Bowl, match up players, and now you have a situation, forget about the East and West, and you get guys to take the 10, 15, 10, 12 players from each team, and you just pick and choose a la like what we see with the Pro Bowl? Murph?
I think I talked about it because not that I'm for that. I just think that if you want to have people care more about the game on Sunday night, then you have to kind of change something around. Then that could be something as simple as changing, you know, the Saturday night stuff to Sunday night, you know, making the feature of competitions like the dunk contest and the three-point shootout. So I think that might be a way to do it. Like I said, yeah, you could do maybe a street ball type thing, one-on-one. You want to do the fantasy draft like they do in the NHL and the NFL. That's fine. I just need to do something because there's really no point watching a game that has zero defense. You know, no one's fouling anyone. It's just it's boring. It's not really worth it. But again, like I said before, the NBA knows the game doesn't matter, and they're very good at just marketing it as like a fun hangout type celebrity weekend where it's like a big party and not really a game that matters.
Fife, do you sit back and say perhaps maybe we could have a situation where you have a la Kevin Durant and LeBron on the same team going at a Carmelo Anthony. You have a situation where, you know, Kyrie and Steph Curry on the same team and do some different things. Do you think the game would benefit if you had something set up like that?
I think it's a cool idea, being that the East has yet to catch up to the West. So I think more people would probably care about the game if they did it like that. You know, the same way the NFL takes two vets like a Jerry Rice or a Michael Irvin and they let them pick teams. You could take maybe Oscar Robertson, Bill Russell, let them pick teams. Maybe that would be fun. But as of right now, the East has yet to catch up to the West, and it's not a good look. So something has to give at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that maybe those guys would be a little too old in terms of picking the players. I think it should be somebody that recently retired. I mean, let's have Kobe Bryant come back next year, and if a guy like, I don't know, maybe have Dominique Wilkins and another player, Gary Payton, and, you know, some of these players that are sort of still connected to the game possibly be able to inevitably pick the players. I think that would be good. I think that would be something that would bode well in terms of the whole, you know, setup and of the game and stuff. Because I agree with both of you guys. It's like the East, it's alley-oops, and, you know, I just don't think that, and I said the game lost a lot when you lost Isaiah and Magic. Because even when Magic had the HIV situation and transpired and he played in Orlando, he came back on a mission to show you that I could still play. And that's what I loved. And I always say, if you don't get a chance, if you haven't seen that game, go on YouTube the All-Star game in Seattle. When Tom Chambers got the MVP, that they had a stretch, I think it was in his first or second quarter, where they went for 5 minutes to the point where people stood up at this first stoppage. If they would take the ball out, Magic going at him, boom. You know, you had a situation where Isaiah came right back down, hitting Moses Malone, God rest his soul, on the pass, boom, lay it up. They just going back and forth. And you had MJ in that game. You had Dr. J. And you just had talent. You had players that you were like, oh, wow. You know, and Rolando Blackman going to the line and hit the free throws to send the game into overtime. It meant something. And I just don't think it means anything anymore.
They're too friendly, first of all.
Yeah, I mean, it's friendly, but, you know, hey, listen, Magic and those guys were friendly, but it came time to play ball. They were all ready to play ball, and it was like, you know what, let's go ahead and handle our business and do what we got to do. Murph, what's your bottom line for tonight?
Oh, my bottom line is, once again, great interview with Glenn Gronkowski, one of the biggest names in football now, so that was fun talking to him, so always appreciate that. And I guess now just I'm hoping for a fun sports weekend, sports month somehow to get us through February. So once we get to March, we'll have more, obviously, baseball, March Madness, and stuff to get us through this. So my bottom line is just that hopefully the NBA and NHL, at least for me, could carry some interesting stuff, because right now it's pretty brutal to the NFL.
Yeah. Fife, what's your bottom line?
My bottom line for tonight is you must be out your mind thinking Louisville, Kentucky rivalry.
See, you keep going there, Fife. Let it go, man. See how you always want to do that?
I ain't letting it go because it's disrespectful and it's not cool. It's not cool.
It's over. Fife, the run is over. And that's what I'm trying to explain to you. The run is over. It's not the same thing. You know what? It's almost like, you know what it's like? It's like the Manning and Brady type of situation rivalry. It's over. You know, you have two coaches that, again, have done a lot.
You can't even make that comparison. Stop it. Stop it.
It's over.
Duke could be 1-19. Carolina could be 2-20. It's a rivalry, huh? Bottom line.
But they haven't met in any type of situation where they've met where a game was on the line for all the marbles. Don't give me the ACC. I'm tired of hearing that. I think that's being said to the media.
You admitted it yourself. There was no game on the line when y'all met. It wasn't the final four.
We only meet once a year. We only meet once a year.
But it wasn't the final four. It wasn't the final four when y'all met.
It was Elite Eight. It was Elite Eight.
That's another.
Win or go home.
That ain't no up for all the marbles. That's to get somewhere.
Win or go home. You guys win or go home. That's what it comes down to.
That's another reason why our rivalry is bigger, because we play twice a year. So it's war twice a year.
Yeah, but if you lose a game, it's a situation where it's like, you know what, hey, it's okay because we're going to see them in the ACC tournament. It's okay. No, that's not the case. My bottom line for tonight is
each atmosphere is bigger, period.
Second best rivalry.
Take a poll and see what the people say.
They've been hoodwinked and bamboozled. I'm not going to get into it.
Take a poll and see what the people say. Because you're the only one that believes that crap. You and Rick Pitino.
That about wraps up the show. I'd like to thank Glenn Gronkowski, Fife Dog. I'd like to thank Vast I Heard. For all of you that listen to the show, don't forget we're back next Tuesday. And it's been always a great, great show. For the great Eddie Murphy, the outstanding one, Fife Dog, I'm Gerald Brown. Thank you so much. Bottom Line Sports Show is out. Have a great evening. Peace.
Peace.